Last week I moved on to immigration from the West Indies and from South Asia. And of course what is particular about that immigration is the intensity of the need to deal with racism. Because if you're Irish or Jewish, from 100 yards nobody knows, yes? But of course if you're West Indian, it's a bit more complicated than that. So I had a look a little bit at some contributions to British culture made by various immigrants. And I'm going to do two things today, I hope. First of all, a short history of anti-racism, because I think I mentioned to you it's important to hear the history of racism, but it's a bit depressing. So we're going to have a look a little bit at the history of anti-racism in Britain, just for a change. And then a shorter look at the history, first of West Indian immigration, that is to say Caribbean immigration, and then Southeast Asian immigration. So let's start in the 1970s. I don't want to go too far back. Let's start in the 1970s. And, of course, I already spoke to you about the 1930s and Cable Streets and the anti-fascism there. In the 1970s, the big event from the point of view of the history of anti-racism was the rise of a fascist organisation, the National Front, and the rise of various forms of opposition to the National Front, in particular the Anti-Nazi League. The Anti-Nazi League was founded in 1976 and was extremely popular. Here you have a picture of some of the buttons, the badges that we used, and as you can see, one of the things they tried to do was to identify everybody as being against the Nazis. So here you have single parents against the Nazis, yeah? Oui, donc des parents célibataires contre les nazis. Post office workers, yeah, building workers, West Ham United, yes, the football supporters of this team against the Nazis. And so it was a popular campaign to try to get everybody to identify some of them were, also there were some very amusing ones, like, you know, the people who go to this pub against the Nazis. Yeah, it became a very popular thing. If you have, if you're very old, or if you could ask your parents, in the 1980s in France, for a short period, for 1 year, the SOS Racisme Touche pas à mon pote was everywhere. You saw it everywhere for a short period. And it's the same sort of thing where suddenly it was no longer really controversial. It's not everybody had one, but you saw them everywhere, the Anti-Nazi League. And this is the history of the Anti-Nazi League, written a little later, 1977 to 81 then, 4 years. And this particular history is interesting, the title. So this is written by somebody who was involved, and he obviously felt it was something very important. Yeah, when we touch the sky, yeah, quand nous avons touché le ciel, it's very emotional, very poetic, very not just a boring thing you do when you're young. So this is the symbol of the Anti-Nazi League was the arrow. This arrow, like Red Indians, yes. Here we have. Now, this, as you can probably see, is actually a later photograph because the result of the Anti-Nazi League campaign was that the National Front divided into two and declined for 20 years, which was good. But in the 1990s, again, there was a little rise of the National Front, and the Anti-Nazi League again existed for a few years. Yeah, and there you can see some of them. What were the characteristics of the Anti-Nazi League then? Well, first of all, let's have a look at the National Front. The National Front began to have some success in the elections in one town in the north, the Blackburn. They got 38%. In a local election, of course, not a national election, but yeah, with the success of the Anti-Nazi League was quite important. This was in the middle of the 1970s. For the first time, for 20 years, there had been very low unemployment, and in the 1970s, suddenly 1 million. I remember when unemployment reached 1 million. Yeah, and of course today in Britain and in France, you know, 3 million. But it was very, very shocking when it got to 1 million. And one of the successful political exploitations of this was, oh, now there are 1 million people, it must be because of the immigrants, of course. Yes, and that was one of the results. The Anti-Nazi League had a particular tactic, that is that every time the National Front had a meeting, there were demonstrations in front of the meeting. So every time the National Front had a meeting with 50 people, there were 500 people in the streets trying to break in and break up their meeting. And this made it very difficult for the National Front, because the people around any political party who say, I'm not sure, I might come, I might not come, well, they stayed at home because they weren't sure enough. And this was it was very demoralising for the National Front. At the same time, there was something a little less political, a little more general, which was Rock Against Racism. And Rock Against Racism was quite simply a series of concerts, music events, festivals, just based on this idea. Now, you've got to remember this is the 1970s. Today, Concert contre le racisme, it's very, very common. I think this was the first time. Yeah, this was a new idea. Let's have rock concerts against racism. Yeah, why not? Yeah, well, it was a new idea. Today, it's not a new idea. Yeah. So that was very successful, of course. And it happened at the same time that punk rock was arriving, and so you got to sort of together. And the other thing which was rather interesting about Rock Against Racism, from the point of view of culture and communication, is that traditionally, in the 1970s, of course, you had the punk rock concerts, they were all white. And you had the reggae concerts, and they were all black. And in Rock Against Racism, for the first time, you had, in the same music festival, the white punks and the black reggaes, and they discovered that they had a lot of things in common. In fact, and this is where you get mixed music, you like your Dire Straits and like things of that nature. Okay, here you have the Tar Babies. Donc les bébés bitumes. That's a very punk name, yes, a slightly controversial name, les bébés bitumes. And the Vacants, yeah, les têtes vides. Yeah, again, very much obviously a punk thing. And then you can see racism is being hammered with a hammer. One more. These are local concerts. There were some big festival concerts, you know, like Hyde Park and Roundhay Park in Leeds. But these are local ones with perhaps 100 or 200 people coming to the concert. Hundreds of concerts around the country. There you have the Zed Men, Les Hommes Zed. Again, very much a sort of punk rock name, a sort of anti-hero name, yeah, the Zed Men. Not the A-Team, yeah, the Zed Men. And The Voice, okay, I don't know, I have no idea how they are, who they are. And this is the big carnival then, the very, very big carnivals with 40,000, 50,000 people. Again, something which is not so uncommon today, but it was a rather new idea. And the Anti-Nazi League there with, so the Tom Robinson Band, which was kind of rock and roll really, and Steel Pulse reggae, X-Ray Specs, punk. So you've got a mix together there, carnival against the Nazis. Trafalgar Square to Victoria Park, so a demonstration and then a big concert. Of course, more people came to the concert than came to the demonstration. That's life. That's the way things work, yeah. Okay, so the 1970s, the history of anti-racism in the 1970s is the history of the Anti-Nazi League and the history of Rock Against Racism. Of course, Rock Against Racism was not very controversial. The Anti-Nazi League was more controversial. I will mention that in a moment. Rock Against Racism was... faudrait pas que je me trompe. Je suis quasiment sûr que Rock Against contre le racisme a été mis en place quand Phil Collins a fait une interview où il sortait des expressions racistes en disant, ouais, quand même, il y a trop d'immigrés. Hein? Something like that. Je suis quasiment certain que c'est Phil Collins, sinon c'est la diffamation, clair et net, mais quasiment certain. And the reaction of a group of musicians saying, no, we don't want we want rock, to be separate from racism. Yeah, so you can check if it was Phil Collins. If it was not Phil Collins, sorry, Phil. Yeah, okay, but I'm pretty sure it was. He'd written something that was really, really, really awful. Again, to be not to justify him, but it has to be said that in the 1970s, I was a teenager, and it was very, very acceptable for people to be racist. Whereas today, young people who are racist, they're still racist, but they're very quiet about it. Yeah. And at the 1970s was very different, and you would hear people being racist frequently in a normal school, high school. Yeah. My impression is that's no longer the case. My impression is that when you were 13, 14, 15, you occasionally heard racists, but they weren't so proud. I hope so. Is that possible? Yeah. Am I in touch with the feeling? Okay, much later, today, in Britain, there has been again a rise of the extreme rights, in particular the British National Party. So a different party, essentially the same ideas. Yeah? The British National Party. And one of the reactions has been this, and it was decided not to revive Rock Against Racism, because Rock is for grandmother and grandfather, isn't it? Yes. So they decided to establish this, which is not rock, but music in general. Love Music, Hate Racism. LMHR, Love Music, Hate Racism. And today they produce big festivals. Yeah, big festivals. Yeah, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, including all these people, who I don't know a lot about, actually. So this is obviously Punjabi Beats is going to be Bhangra, DJ, you know, some house or garage, and so on. So very, very modern things. What is new about this is that Rock Against Racism was, in the 1970s, very amateur. You know, groups of friends organising it. And today it's much more well organised. So you can see this is sponsored by Unite, which is a very big trade union. It's like the CGT, you know, the CGT. So it's sponsored by very big organisations, a radio station, and I don't know who these people are. Yeah. But it's a big, almost institutional thing. Yeah, Love Music, Hate Racism. Here you have, then, the British National Party. The British National Party. This is 2 or 3 years ago. You can see it's a modern photograph because it has a website on the banner, and you can see their slogan: "Britain is full up." Yeah, long live terre, c'est rempli, il n'y a plus de place. Okay, not sophisticated. You can see the use of the Union Jack. Now, the Union Jack in Britain, you don't see as often as the French flag in France. Of course, in France, every lycée has the flag in front of it, every mairie, yeah, and so on. In Britain, you don't see them, except on the Buckingham Palace. You know, could you open the door? I think there's something trying to get in there. Buckingham Palace is something that's quite rare. And in general, in public, it is reserved to the far right, mostly. Okay. And then the slogan, yes, British jobs for British workers. Yeah, there they are. You can see, look who they are. Lots of women. A lot of women here. It's not just skinheads. Yeah. Okay. That's where they are at today. And this is the campaign today against the BNP. So this is at local elections. Il faut dire ils ont gagné 2 eurodéputés il y a 2 ans. Which was very, very new. Very, very shocking to the English, because in general, it's difficult for small parties to win elections, and so you've never had a situation. For example, the British National Party or the National Front have never controlled a town council. That's never happened. They've just had 3 or 4 members on every town council. And so this is a campaign, a trade union campaign, against the BNP, United Trade Union. And this is the the truck that went around Britain. Use your vote, stop the fascist BNP. So two focuses there. First, use your vote, because of course one of the difficulties with elections is a lot of people stay at home, yeah, sometimes for not necessarily for bad reasons, but yeah. And so this is a campaign saying, don't stay at home, come out and vote against the fascist BNP. Now notice, they do not say who you should vote for. This is a special united campaign specifically against the BNP. So they don't say, vote for the Labour Party, vote for the Greens, vote for the far left. No, it's a united campaign, just don't vote fascist or vote against the fascists. Vote for whoever you want, but vote against the fascists. And this was very successful. Yes, that's right. In 2009, they got some Euro MPs. The final far-right organisation, so in the 1970s, the National Front, in the 1990s and 2000s, the British National Party, and 2 years ago, or 3 years ago, we have a new extreme-right organisation, and this is the English Defence League. Yeah, la Ligue de Défense des Anglais. Yeah, pas tous les Anglais, seulement les Blancs. The English Defence League. And the English Defence League are a little more modern, and they specialise in racism against Muslims. Yeah, this is the modern form. So I apologise for showing you all these horrible people, but it's history. The English Defence League, and here they are in Manchester. For example, they organise demonstrations in front of mosques. Ils vont faire des manifestations devant les mosquées, disons il faut fermer les mosquées. Yeah, okay. And of course, they say we're not racist. But most organisations say we're not racist, but I think they are. The English Defence League. So notice that we have lost. It's a slightly different because it's not British; it's English. That's important. It's not the British National Party, it's the Empire and so on. And the English Defence League, it's, poor little Englishmen. It is so hard for us with all these immigrants coming to town. It's so hard, really. Yes, okay, maybe, or maybe not. Yeah. Again, there has been, I have some more, I think. Yeah, these are the same people, the English Defence League. So there you can see, no more mosques as their slogan. However, the good thing about this photograph, what's the good thing about this photograph? The good thing is that the poster has been made by hand. It's not a big organisation with a lot of money making it in beautiful, in seven colours. Yeah, he's made it by hand at home, so they are not so big and strong for the moment. And here you have a picture of these people who are telling you that they're not racist, but might be. Okay. They look like now they've had this year and last year a series of demonstrations in Manchester, Sheffield, Preston, Birmingham. And a typical demonstration of the English Defence League would probably be 100 or 200 people. So it's small, but scary if you're a Muslim. In several cases, then there have been counter demonstrations, donc des contre-manifestations, by organisations and also by local Muslims saying, no, we don't want these people here. Now, the question of the anti-Nazi League in the 1970s and the opposition to the English Defence League today opens up a big political debate, which I'm going to explain to you, but you are, of course, you can have whatever opinion you like, and that is, what do you do when you have racist demonstrations? And different anti-racists have different ideas. Yeah, some people say the most important thing is education. Yeah, let's go and give the information. Here are what the immigrants do. This is why we want immigrants, etc., which, of course, is very important. And there are some people who say, that's okay, but we don't want them on our streets. If there are 100 English Defence League, let's organise 500 people and go and make them go home. Yeah, and of course this is a big debate. Yeah, because some people think you should only use these tactics, and other people think you should only use these tactics. That's politics, yeah? People debate about tactics, yeah? And also, for example, I said that the anti-Nazi League made the National Front split and decline. This is my opinion. Other people say, no. They didn't help. The National Front was already declining, it was automatic. So even about history, you have two opinions or three opinions. But, you know, that's history. You always have two or three opinions, yeah? You can't have everybody agreeing. So here we have the opposition to the English Defence League. This is a communist newspaper, and you have the headline there, anti-fascists run EDL out of town. Les antifascistes ont fait fuir de la ville le English Defence League. To run out of town. And underneath, far-right thugs outnumbered 3-1 at Manchester rally. Les voyous de l'extrême droite étaient dépassés de 3-1 lors de la manifestation à Manchester. Okay. The idea. And so this is the opposition. Again, you cannot, you can see that we are talking of demonstrations of 200, 300 people, not 10,000. Yeah, these are not mass demonstrations. Look at some of the opposition. This is continuing today. If you read English newspapers, every now and then you will see the difference. Okay. Great, thanks. Another important part of the anti-racist movement in Britain today is this magazine, Searchlight. And Searchlight is a magazine against fascism. It comes out every month. Very interesting. It comes out every month. And it's quite big, 50 pages. Yeah? So it's really, it's an interesting magazine because it's about organising, but especially analysing and understanding what is happening on the far right. Yeah. Again, you know, some people, some anti-racists are saying the most important thing is the leaflets, get a lot of people to a demonstration. And some people are saying we also need to understand what they are doing. So in here you will have, well, look at the headline, is a recession good news for the BNP? S'il y a une récession, est-ce que le British National Party va en profiter? Etc. And here, particular campaigns, keeping fascists out of unions. Yeah, comment empêcher les fascistes de s'implanter dans les syndicats? BNP peddles poisons to young, la propagande fasciste dans les écoles. Dans les collèges. Yeah, okay, so these are some of the, this is today, yeah, these are some of the things which are going on today. Finally, also today, this is a particular campaign against racism called Show Racism the Red Card. And this is actually a campaign against racism in football. So a specific campaign against racism in football. Because, as you know, football is extremely popular in Britain. Yeah, you have 50,000 people at a Manchester United match, no problem. Yeah. And some of the far-right organisations have organised inside the football supporters and go to football matches in order to express racism. And it's very vicious. It's like when there is a black football player, they're throwing bananas. Yeah, it's really disgusting. It's really very, very upsetting, and also shouting in groups against the black football players. Yeah, and because of this, this organisation, Show Racism the Red Card, established itself, and they often go to the football match on Saturday and say, you know, oh, yeah, have a leaflet. You know, this, we don't want racism here. You know, listen to this, read this, you know. This is what happened. This, you know, so a mass campaign at the football grounds, because, of course, the majority of football supporters are not racist, but a small group can make a lot of noise. And this is study notes. So again, on fait un pack d'études, Yeah, comment prépa- comment faire une campagne? That's what it is. It's you know, get this, how to get together with your friends and have a campaign at your football team. Yeah, at your football team. Yes, that's a rather specific thing. One of the things that all of these shows, the Anti-Nazi League, Rock Against Racism, Love Music, Hate Racism, Show Racism the Red Card, is that a lot of politics in Britain is outside the political parties. So some of the people doing this are in a political party, but it's not generally organised by political parties. It's more outside. There's a bigger tradition of that than in France. Okay, the last... I've almost finished the story of anti-racism in Britain. Very brief story of anti-racism in Britain. But I need to talk about this gentleman, this guy, Stephen Lawrence. Now, this is now 17 years ago, in 1993. But it was a very, very important case and really did make a difference, although it wasn't good for him. Stephen Lawrence was murdered by a group of racists in 1993, which obviously in itself is pretty shocking. However, what happened was it became clear over the next year that the police did not want to help. This is not my opinion, this is the official government opinion. They organised a long time later an inquiry, and they wrote a report, a government report about the police, and it said the police are institutionally racist. Okay, now that was the official government opinion, that the police were racist, not my opinion. So this was obviously very very heavy, yeah, very heavy. This was much later, so... And the result of this was that the government introduced, especially the new Labour government in 1997, introduced a lot of reforms, including the one I mentioned to you about the fact that now public organisations are obliged to promote racial equality. This was the case which shocked everybody and made somebody. But certainly it was very, very shocking. Yet the government established a committee to study the case of Stephen Lawrence. A committee, and the head of the committee was a lord. He was not a radical student or something. And his result was, yeah, the police are institutionally racist. Yeah. Now that's important. Institutionally racist. It means that it's not the case that we have a few racists in the police. It's that the police are fundamentally a racist organisation. Now, that was in the middle of the 1990s, so obviously very, very heavy there. But this case was particularly shocking because, in fact, everybody knew, in the town, everybody knew who killed Stephen Lawrence. But it was impossible to prove because the police were not interested. 6 months later, when everybody knew this news, the Daily Mail, which is a conservative newspaper, put on the front page, here are the five people who killed Stephen Lawrence. They were not arrested. They were not put in prison because the police had not organised to have witnesses or proof, etc. And so the Daily Mail, a conservative newspaper, said, these are murderers. Si nous nous trompons, qui nous traîne en justice pour diffamation. Yeah. Vous avez bien compris, ce ne sont pas faits traîner en justice pour diffamation. So this is the big case, the Stephen Lawrence case, is the one that, you know, a little bit like the Dreyfus affair in France, yeah? So you get big changes happening because of that. Okay, what on earth is that? Yes. Okay. I'm going to stop there on the question of...